Thank you very much indeed. Tonight, law. We all know that the law is an ass, that it has a long arm, that possession is 9 points of it, that the editor of the Daily Mirror is not above it, and of course that there is one of it for the rich and one of it for the poor. The rich are made wards of court, the poor are hauled before the juvenile courts in need of care and protection. The rich sue each other for libel, the poor smite each other in public houses and are charged with causing an affray. The rich get divorces, the poor get 5 years for bigamy. If a poor man pins somebody against a brick wall and beats the living daylights out of him, it's called assault and battery. If a rich man does it, it's called the Eton wall game. As Anatole France said, the law with magnificent impartiality forbids rich and poor alike to steal bread and sleep under bridges. Meanwhile, over in the courtroom.
You stand before this court charged with arson, manslaughter, robbery with violence, rape, treason, and 3 separate cases of murder. What have you to say for yourself?
I'm terribly sorry.
QCs are much the same, of course, all over the world, though with slightly different terminologies wherever you go. I mean, a prosecuting counsel in Greenland, for instance, got up last week and said, "And where were you on the night of October the 15th to March the 15th? What the qualifications are for a judge, goodness knows. In 1956, a man who was convicted of passing dud checks by one judge paid his fine and left. The check bounced. So I must say, I think I admire even more the gent in this quote from the Woking Herald. When examined by the divisional surgeon, the defendant was very abusive, and when asked to clench his teeth, he took them out, gave them to the doctor, and said, "You clench them." Meanwhile, back in the courtroom,
I hereby sentence you to 3 months' imprisonment.
Six.
Six. Do I hear nine? Nine?
Nine. Wait a second.
Time. 12. As the Daily Mail put it, this form was drawn up in 1936, and it does not clearly state what is meant. It is just a legal document. Though at the same time, the administrators of the law, of course, are the police, and they're engaged in continuous detection. Only last week, a couple of officers were investigating the latest of these horse doping scandals, where horses were alleged to have been fed stimulants to help them win races. The police, as usual, were naturally and very wisely skeptical. Mr. Cleese is fit too. At present, lawyers are not allowed to advertise, of course, but in their reckless quest for fees, it's inevitable, I suppose, that one day they will be allowed to advertise their services or appear in advertisements that say things like "the firm where all the actions are," or "every time the defense rests, I use a Dunlopillo mattress," or "getaway people use furniture vans." Or, of course, any judge worth his salt will always like to think about his cases, and think about them a lot in advance.
"There's a disgusting case. Chap dressed up as a woman. Long dress, shoulder-length hair, silk stockings and high-heeled shoes. I shall deal most severely with him. Now then, am I seam straight?"
The though few experiences with the law or the breaking of it can have been quite as depressing as this one was in the, to the person who experienced it anyway, in the Daily Express, quote, "When Mrs. Janet Trent opened her diary yesterday morning, the entry for the day had already been filled up by someone else and read, 5 a.m., house burgled." Meanwhile, back in the courtroom, a solemn moment.
Will you read what is on this card?
"May every Christmas wish come true, and joy this day be yours, with mistletoe upon the tree and holly on the doors."
The other side.
"I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Love, Dennis and Mabel."
Much of the lawyer's time, of course, is taken up with debating nice points on such matters as, does a small boy wearing roller skates constitute a vehicle? And if so, if the small boy falls flat on his backside on a yellow line, is he illegally parked? If he's a butcher's boy and he's conveying meat, does he become a commercial vehicle? If he is a commercial vehicle and the meat is pre-cooked, does he then constitute a mobile restaurant? And if he is a restaurant, does he have the required lavatories for both men? And if he is a lavatory, can he be arrested for loitering on his own premises while parked on a yellow line? Of course, our roving reporters have only come face to face with the officers of the law in their case, and we wondered what those reporters had made of them. What do you think of policemen?
I only like the ones that are good looking.
Well, I think that they're mad and stupid, and I don't think they should put traffic lights up and wave their hands across the road to cars. I don't think it's right.
I think they're too tall.
Oh, I think they're old-fashioned.
Well, some of them are very nice.
And what do you think of policemen as doing?
Well, they disguise themselves up as robbers, and they rob trains and things.
The trains?
Yes.
How many trains have policemen robbed, do you think?
They robbed the great train robbery.
Why do you think they did the great train robbery, the policemen?
Because they knew they wouldn't get told off by the judges and things.
That's our service to the police investigators. But what about the people who get convicted by the law and sent to jail? Julie.
Well, the cry to build jail ain't no jail at all. The rats in that jail are eating the wall, and it's hard times in the cry to build jail. Hard time, poor boy. Now the beds in that jail are made out of old rugs, and when you lie down, well, you're covered with bugs. And there's hard times in the Cryderville jail, hard time, poor boy. There's a big bull ring in the middle of the floor, a big fat jailer who opens the door. Your pockets he'll pick, your clothes he'll sell, get drunk on the money, gosh darn him to hell. Hard times in the Cryderville jail, hard time, poor boy. Well, I'd sing of the lawyer who comes to your cell. He swears he will clear you in spite of all hell. He gets all your money before he can rest, then says, please, guilty, I think it's best. Hard times in the Cryderville jail, hard time, poor boy. Now old Judge Simpkins reads us the law, the silliest judge that I ever saw. And there's hard times in the Cryderville jail, hard time, poor boy. And there sits the jury, they're a devil of a crew. They look a poor prisoner through and through. And here's to the sheriff, I'd like to forgot, the darndest old fool that we've gotten the lot. Well, hard times, right in the jail, hard time, poor boy. Well, now I've come to the end of my song. I leave it there's hard times in the cried of Milton. Hard times, oh boy, yes, there's hard times in the cried of Milton. Hard times, oh boy.
The law really is an ass. I mean, the maximum penalty for housebreaking by day is 14 years imprisonment. But slide into the back kitchen by night, or to be more exact, between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m, and your offence becomes burglary, and you're liable to life imprisonment. You're also liable to life imprisonment for falsely impersonating a Chelsea pensioner in order fraudulently to draw his pension. For trading with pirates, the impersonation of owners of Indian stock, and maliciously setting fire to a stack of wheat. There's no doubt about it, it's all for the lawyers. Parkinson's principle is true. Legal charges increase in proportion to the amount of money available for their payment. Remember, if you watch the coppers, the legal fees will take care of themselves. Of course, there's no doubt that without, however, the mind and the learning and the skilled pleading of a QC, justice might sometimes just not be done.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you have just heard the case for the prosecution. You have heard four witnesses testify that on the night of the 9th of December, the accused, Edward Ferret, was discovered in the Crown Jewels chamber of the Tower of London, as it were, stealing the Crown Jewels, and that when challenged, he struck one Michael Apter a glancing blow across the teeth. Playfully. Now, it will not have escaped your notice, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that all four witnesses in this case are beef-eaters. That is to say, government employees, after the manner of tax collectors, traffic wardens, and erstwhile public hangmen. Far be it from me to suggest that they are sadistic, lying, drunken thugs. Secondly, Mr. Ferret has admitted handling the Crown Jewels, but he has explained that he had lost some similar objects during the previous week, and was merely examining them to establish whether they were in fact his own. The only reason that he had placed a number of the smaller crowns in a bag he happened to be carrying is that he wished to have the chance of examining them in the daylight. Now, the prosecution have made much play of the fact that Mr. Ferret's bag bore the inscription Swag. But as he has explained, he borrowed the bag that very afternoon from one Spartacus Wag, whom we have not been able to produce. Whom we have not been able to produce in court because he is at present vacationing in northern Ethiopia, as it were. As to the alleged assault on Mr. Apter, Mr. Ferret has explained how in the darkness of the chamber he quite reasonably mistook the shadowy form of Mr. Apter for a puma. This is an error, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, such as we all make from time to time. I myself have an aunt who, after dusk, looks almost exactly like an antelope. Consequently, my client fended off the puma, or, as the prosecution allege, beef-eater, with a tomahawk that he found lying around on the floor. And so, in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, indeed, darlings, I ask you, is it likely that a man like Mr. Ferret, a man so wealthy and so generous, a man who at this moment has 12 new cars he scarcely needs parked outside this very courtroom, is it likely, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that such a man would sink to such a petty theft? And so, members of the jury, you must retire, as indeed you may soon be able to. Thank you, madam.
Of course, criminals are not always as fearsome as they sound. I mean, this is the Northwich Chronicle, which is as fearsome as it sounds. Parsons said that just before Christmas, he tried to break into a jeweler's shop in Witten Street. But the job took a long time, and as he'd promised his wife he'd be home early, he had to leave it. Well, this is the Hearts and Essex Observer, quote, Davis was fined £2 for attempting to travel on the railway with an already used ticket. A railway official said that when asked to explain previous clip markings on the ticket, the defendant said, moths. A alibi of the week. There's no doubt, though, that the most awesome figures in the whole pageant, or indeed farce of law, are the judges. And the most awesome of those, I suppose, are the appeal court judges. And the most awesome moment in an appeal court hearing is the moment when the three judges decide in their wisdom there must be an adjournment.
The court will adjourn for 15 minutes.
Court, be upstanding.
Proceed, Mr. Barrett.
There's no doubt about it. They're an extraordinary group, the judges, with their catalogues of extraordinary pronouncements. This is from the Evening News. Said Judge Blagden today, a man who had been given the hospitality of his cousin's house and subsequently committed misconduct with the cousin's wife, had done something which morally was as bad as stealing the spoons from the dining room drawer. Easily. Of course, the most interesting theory the law has to contend with at the moment is the principle that the punishment should fit the crime, it's always being said. But what on earth does it actually mean? I mean, does it mean that people who commit arson will be set on fire? That people convicted of theft will be stolen? Should a handbag snatcher have his handbag snatched? And how would a judge deal with a case of indecent exposure? The mind boggles. Luckily, however, the protectors of the law are busy at work.
Evening, sir.
Evening, officer.
Fine night.
Indeed.
Just a minute, sir. Indeed what?
I beg your pardon?
You said indeed.
Yes, indeed, it's a fine night.
Oh, is it? Is it really? Indeed a fine night for what, sir?
I don't know.
Perhaps what you intended to say was indeed it's a fine night for a bit of strangling. Or indeed it's a fine night for assaulting a young person of the opposite sex, sir.
No, that's not what I intended to say.
Oh, I see. Just slipped out, did it? All right, sir. I'm afraid I'll have to ask you what you got in them boots.
A pair of feet, officer.
Come on, open them up. Let's have a look at them. I suppose you can prove that those feet are your own property, can you, sir?
Well, I'm afraid I can't.
Oh, in that case, I'll have to ask you for your name, sir.
Very well. Roger Tate.
Gladys Mouse Trouser.
No, I said Roger Tate.
All right, sir, one moment. We'll get it all down in a minute. Gladys.
Gladys?
Or would you prefer to be known as Mrs. Mouse Trouser, sir?
I certainly would not.
All right. When asked for name, said he would prefer to be known as Gladys.
Look here, officer, I mean, you don't really think I'm a woman, do you? Goodness me, I certainly can prove that.
said he wasn't really a woman and offered to prove it to me. That's going to look pretty black for you, that is, you know, sir. Giving a false name, posing as a female, and being indecently attired.
Where?
There, sir. And what's more, being in possession of two deadly blunt instruments. Not going to look very good in court, sir, this.
Look, officer, can't you let it slip? I'm a family man and the disgrace, and I...
Are you about to offer me a bribe, sir?
Certainly not.
Right, that does it. All right, Tiny, book him. Giving a false name, posing as a female, being in possession of an offensive weapon.
Right, come along, you.
You might put him down for the mail train robbery while you're at it. They always crack in the end. Evening, sir.
Good evening, officer.
Fine night.
Certainly is a fine...
Just a minute, sir.
Yes?
Certainly is a fine night for what?
Of course, there is a lot of talk at the moment about modernising the law. QCs, I suppose it's possible in the end. It doesn't seem very likely, but QCs, I suppose, will be invited to take nylon. The Lord Chancellor will take his seat in the House of Lords on the man-made fibre sack. Barristers will give up taking briefs from solicitors and buy them from that sweet little boutique. And the jury, having delivered a divided verdict, the judge will turn to the public gallery and say, well, six they do and six they don't. Let's see what our second jury have to say about it. And they say guilty, but I have a sneaking suspicion that he might be innocent. However, there's no doubt that the law is based on the needs of an upper or ruling class to keep the lower class in its place. That's why they always talk about the criminal classes. Of course, one of the characteristics of the law is that it does remain fairly, considering everything that happens, imperturbable.
And do you admit that you are nothing more than a miserable, cowardly, wretched thief?
The witness will please confine himself to answering the question.
Though, of course, it is a help in the law if you have a regular set of jargon to fall back on.
My lad, this time I should like to call a surprise witness.
though nothing could be quite as tense as that sort of courtroom drama that we see these days on television or the film.
Thomas Higgins, I shall now pronounce sentence. Silence in court. And if there's any more noise, I shall have to ask the orchestra to leave.
That's the law, really. Nothing to do with passion or emotion. The only real sentiment we could discover in court happened in Australia. A woman who pumped six bullets last year into her husband in Canberra was acquitted. The jury felt sorry for her because she was a widow. In general, though, when you come face to face with the law, remember that beneath that cold, harsh, impersonal exterior, there beats a cold, harsh, impersonal heart. Good night.
Next Friday, Britain goes on holiday, and David Frostum and he and his team submit another report on the habits and the pitfalls of continental vacations. Watch for the Frost Report on holidays next Friday at 5 to 9. 21st Century is our next feature. Stay tuned.